We've been working on a topic that is this: you make a difference. We believe here at Boca Lead that every single person here in Boca Raton and the surrounding areas, in your businesses, your professions, your nonprofits, you can make a difference. And we want to help be a part of that. We are not here to tell anybody how to run their business, how to do your industry, how to make more money. We're here to help you as an individual and to raise up people of integrity, of character, of honesty, of truth, of trust, so that when people do business in Boca Raton, they know they're doing business with people that they can trust and move forward. I think we have a world-class city, and I believe we have a world-class opportunity to do business in this community as well. So that's a part of what we do here at Boca Lead. So You Make a Difference is the title we've given for the whole year. And today's title sounds a little odd or dissonant to that, is You Can't Do It Alone. So I'm saying you can make a difference, but you just can't do it alone. Let me give you an example. Did anybody play softball or baseball as a child or coaching your children right now? One of the things you do when you learn to play baseball, at least when I learned to play baseball, was you start with T-ball and then you immediately go to coach pitch baseball. Coach pitch baseball is where your coach pitches to your team. So if you ever coached that, or when I was playing, it was interesting because our coach always pitched to us the easiest type of pitches, right? They would just come over. They were almost lobs coming over. And we were 7, 8, 9, 10 years old. I forget the exact point. And you could just hit the ball. If you had any coordination, all the coach said was, keep your eye on the ball. Keep your eye on the ball, and I'm going to throw it right to where it's supposed to be. So he would teach us that it was going to come right across, and you just hit it right across. Well, he never told us that next year it was going to be the other team pitching at you. And they were going to pitch the ball to you, and instead of lobbing it, I've never seen these 10, 11, 12-year-olds, they're pitching 60 miles an hour, then 70 miles an hour. When I got into high school, there were some guys pitching 80 miles an hour at me, and they weren't pitching over the plate. They were pitching it right at me, right? Because, and then hopefully, if they had been taught properly, it would curve across the plate. And the coach said the exact same thing he said to me when I was 8 years old. Keep your eye on the ball. Well, that's kind of the stupidest thing I've ever heard. I am scared to death because that ball is coming right at me. And then, you know, they're not pros when they're 14 years old. And I got hit because I'm a big target. I got hit more times. And you know what I said? Enough of this game. I'm never going into the minor leagues. I'm never going into the majors. I'm giving up baseball. Because I am sick and tired of being told to keep my eye on the ball and watching it hit me. Because the other thing they said is, don't get out of the batter's box. Don't move out of the batter's box. So I would watch it hit me. It's the most ridiculous thing. So I took up another game. I took up a safer game, golf. So I go out, my father, who's a great golfer, said, okay, Billy at the time, he goes, I'm going to teach you how to play golf. He said, keep your eye on the ball. I said, the ball's right here, Dad. It's not coming at me. I'm supposed to hit it out. He goes, keep your eye on the ball. I go, Dad, that is the stupidest thing I've ever heard. I can keep my eye on the ball. And this is what he said. You won't keep your eye on the ball. I go, what do you mean? It's right there. I get to even prop it up with a little white tee and prop it up the way I want. And then I say, it's right there. He goes, you're not going to look at it. He taught me how to swing, and I have a pretty good natural swing because of baseball and all the rest. And so what happens is when you swing a golf club, your head moves with your arms. I never knew that. Your head moves with your arms like this. And he would say, Bill, you're not watching the ball. You're watching the club. He said, and if you do that, those of you who are golfers know that you cannot orient fast enough, and you'll duff the ball. And instead of going 200 yards or 250 yards or whatever you're trying to do, it dribbles down 20 feet down. Have you ever done this? I have. So he says, keep your eye on the ball. And I keep going like this. Years. I mean, this is why all of us are sitting here and not sitting somewhere else playing golf, right? We got to make a living because we cannot keep our eye on the silly little high-compression white ball that's sitting right in front of us. So don't think when someone says, do this, and you go, boy, that is the easiest thing. It is not always the easiest thing to do. It's easy to understand, keep your eye on the ball, but it's not. And here's the funny thing about it. In baseball, we all know that it takes a whole team to play baseball. There are managers and coaches and equipment managers and grounds and umpires and referee, all these different things. There's about 15 people on this team. There's 15 people on that team, 9 play at a time. We know all this. You can't play baseball alone, but all of us think we can golf alone. You can go out and golf or just golf with one other person, golf alone. The reality is I learned that you can't golf alone because in the behind the scenes are people that are groundskeepers, are mowing that thing before daylight. And they are out there. There are dozens and dozens and dozens of people that are working all over this golf course and in the back lot, repairing the golf carts and all that thing so that I can try to keep my eye on this silly little high-compression ball. You can't do it alone. There is nothing in this world we can do alone. There's a book that was written a few years ago that many of you probably read. It's called The E-Myth. Did anybody read The E-Myth? The E means entrepreneurial. The entrepreneurial myth is this. And I'm an entrepreneur. I love entrepreneurs. Is anybody an entrepreneur in here? Do you love to create and do things? There's just something about entrepreneurs I love. But the entrepreneurial myth is this, is that you can do it alone. And the reality is you can't. Because those who do it alone, there's three things you have to do in a business, an entrepreneurial business, I should say. There's the entrepreneur who's kind of decides what to do. And then there's the person who actually does it, the technician or the creator or whatever. It's right here. And then there's got to be somebody who manages all this, manages the business. Well, if you're a one-person shop, it's easy to do. But the minute you begin to grow beyond one person, you can't do it yourself. It's interesting. There's a man who just died back in December, December 5th, a guy named Chuck Williams. That name means nothing to anybody. But the business he created, everybody knows, which is Williams, Chuck Williams, Williams-Sonoma. Williams-Sonoma, the man who created Williams-Sonoma, was 100 years old. He died December 5th. He was born in Florida, moved to California during the Depression to find a better life. I think his father did. Fell in love with Sonoma. How do you say it?
Sonoma,
thank you. Wow, I have spent more money in that store. I can't even say it. Thank you. And he loved it there. So he decided to open a store. He loved to cook and loved to create and loved to, he went to France and found all these things. This is the 1950s. He comes back and he realizes he can't open a store in Sonoma because it's not that big. So he chooses San Francisco. He opens a store and calls it Williams-Sonoma in San Francisco, 1958. It is wildly successful, but he is the entrepreneur, the creator of all the cookbooks and everything, and he manages the books at night. So he says, it works for one. Why don't we open three more? He opens three more stores and goes under. Williams-Sonoma went broke. Broke. 1962. He said, I can't do this. I am losing money every month. So he came back, got people together and said, I need someone to help finance me. I need someone to run the back office. I need someone to run the sales. I'll still do the cookbooks and the creative part. And we'll put a team together. And in about 12 years, he had 600 stores. And it never ended. I mean, Pottery Barn is under that moniker and other stores. It's like, this is unbelievable. That he was able to do it because he put a team together of people that could do it. He, the named person in the business, couldn't do it. Now you think, well, Bill, that makes sense, but there are so many people whose name, they just did it on their own. And let me give you a couple of them, if I could. I love studying biography. So you go, Bill Gates, he did it on his own. Bill Gates did not do it on his own. He had Paul Allen and Steve Ballmer with him, right? So Bill Gates did a lot, but he didn't do it on his own. Walt Disney, he didn't do it on his own. He had Roy Disney and those 9 animators who made all those original films. They were called the 9 Old Men, if you've ever read a biography about Disney. It was those 9 men who really made Disney what it was in those early years. Bill Hewlett had David Packard, right? They couldn't do it alone. Bill Clinton, it's not about politics, but Bill Clinton became president in 1992 because of his campaign staff. There's incredible writings that it was the best campaign staff ever assembled in the history of the United States. And it was they, who made Bill Clinton the president in terms of that. It's the economy, stupid. You remember that comment? Michael Jordan, he's the tantamount best basketball player who ever existed. He could not have done it without Phil Jackson and Scottie Pippen and the other guys, even a little with Dennis Rodman. How about Brian Wilson, the Beach Boys? Does anybody like the Beach Boys? Brian Wilson wrote all those songs. He couldn't have done it without Mike Love. You look at, how about Rocky Balboa? I have a friend who's really into Rocky. Rocky Balboa couldn't have done it with who? Without who? Mickey. And probably Adrian and probably Paulie too. I'm not a Rocky fan, so I'm doing it for a friend. Adele. Now this is interesting. Adele is the number one singer, songwriter and all. She says these words, I was reading it the other day, that without two people, she would not have made the first album. She said there are two people, a guy named Jonathan Dickens and Lucy, his sister, Dickens, manager and producer. And when this album, 25, came out a few weeks ago, he is the one who picked the songs. And she had picked songs, and it was Jonathan who said, they won't be successful, take these songs and not those. Now, it is him who made that album successful. She had the talent, she had the creativity, she can sing amazingly. Our family loves her singing. But it was her, it was Jonathan who did it. But we'll never know Jonathan Dickens and his wife Lucy. They've been with her from the beginning, I think since she was 19 years old, they've been with her and have made her who she is. Think of Michelangelo. You go, Michelangelo, he did the Sistine Chapel, right? No, he didn't. There were 13 other painters who painted with Michelangelo. He was the organizer, he was the creative mind behind it, but there were 14 of them who painted it. Then the last one, I mean, it could go on. Diana Ross had the Supremes, Gladys Knight had the Pips, etc. You know my music taste. But Ronald Reagan, since I did Clinton, I'll do Reagan. Ronald Reagan will be known 100 years from now for 6 words he said, Mr. Gorbachev, tear this wall down. You know, he never said that. I mean, he did say it, but he didn't create it. It was Peter Robinson, a man in his staff, who went to Berlin 2 weeks before the visit, was sitting at a table of people and saying, what is the biggest problem here? And they said, half our family is on the other side of the wall, and we would just like to see the wall down. And that got Peter Robinson thinking of, why doesn't the president say to Mr. Gorbachev, tear this wall down? And that ignited a whole movement. It wasn't the movement, but it ignited the movement. But it was Peter Robinson. Ronald Reagan was able to say it. He was the president. But it was his team that allowed him to say that and gave him the words to say it. And think about it. It's the team that is doing it. Oh, the highest paid woman, I left out one, Safra Catz, the highest paid woman in America. She's the CEO of Oracle, right? CEO of Oracle. She makes $52 million a year. She always has Mark Hurd, who grew up in South Florida, next to her at all times because she knows she can't do it alone. She's the highest paid woman in America in terms of businesswoman in America. And she knows she needs Mark Hurd, and she has Larry Ellison right behind her talking in her ear and in her thoughts because of Oracle. So it's amazing. We can't do it on our own. So now, how do we do it with the help of others? And that's what we have today. So if you have your paper in front of you, we're going to spend the next few minutes talking about some opportunities. And now here's what I tell everybody. Don't think all the things I say over the next few minutes, you're not going to be able to remember everyone, so just grab one or two thoughts. It's kind of best practices. What I'm going to talk about is how to develop teams that have meaning and can help you in your business. This is a business context. So first of all, you look on your paper, you see the word working group. There are two ways to work together in the business, predominantly. There's a working group and there's a team. There's a difference between the two. A working group is where everybody is together in a group, but they all report to one person. So you report to me, you report to me, you report to me, and you run the back office, you run the sales team, you run the legal department, and you all report to the boss. It's not a team, it's just a group of people who assemble every so often, once a week, once a month, once a quarter, to report to each other what they are doing for the boss or for the company. That's a working group. And those are good, but I'd like to see us move beyond that into teams. Those of you that have a Jewish background and the Old Testament, Moses built teams. Joshua built teams. Those of us who are Christians, Jesus built teams. The disciples are a team. He even subdivided the team into groups of three, the most famous being Peter, James, and John, the apostles, but he had four groups of three in the disciples. He had teams working together. So it's not a new concept. It's kind of new in the business the last 20 years, but it's been around since the beginning of time. So what are the characteristics of a good team? And I've put five down there, and there's a word with it, and so there's more than five characteristics of a good team. But the first one is this. A team that is good in business has a meaningful common purpose the team has helped to shape. So the team comes together and says, this is the purpose for why we are together as a team. Now, the team doesn't have to be everybody. It can be a sub-team. It can be just a team within your accounting department, a team within the legal department. It can be the executive team, whatever it is. This works for nonprofits and for-profits. And this allows you, if you do this with your team, it gives you alignment. Alignment in your organization. And alignment is key because it lets everybody know where we're heading. And we're all heading that way. You know, in a car, when the car gets unaligned, your tires, what happens? It veers. It bounces if it's unbalanced. It veers if it's unaligned. Nowadays, we can hold the steering column so that it still goes straight even when it's not aligned properly. You can still go straight, but what you do is you wear out your tires. You wear out people if you're going this way and everybody's kind of unaligned and going every which way. And it's you have to align. And this lets you know, by the way, when someone is working on the team or in your organization who has a different purpose, who has a different agenda, who has a different desire. There's nothing wrong with that necessarily, but it may not align with what you're doing. And if someone is in your organization and they're unaligned, you got to do something about it. Either get them in alignment or you need to move them somewhere else in the organization if it's big enough, or off the team. You know, the voting off the ship, off the boat kind of thing does have to happen, because an unaligned car tire will take the whole car with it. An unaligned tire, one tire, will take the whole team. One person can move the team off, and that is a scary thought. Those of you that are small business people and you only have a dozen on your team, one person can affect the whole team. Number two, as you move beyond this, there are specific performance goals that can flow from this common purpose, and that gives us clarity. You need alignment, but you also need clarity. What is the clear way to get to what we are aligned to do? And because I work in a nonprofit and everything I do is in public, we have 1,000 members at this church, we have over 600 children in our school, I can't give you specifics in our organization, but I have to tell you that we have had unaligned people and we've had to move them on because they were diffusing the clarity of the goals. And you want clarity because your competition is going to beat you if you aren't clear at what you're trying to do. There is so much competition in South Florida. It is scary. Whatever industry you are in, competition is there. Even in our public side, you have competition of people wanting to move their business over there instead of here. There's competition at all. That's why clarity to me is very important. Number three, then you need a mix of complementary skills. This is focus. You cannot have everybody that does the exact same thing. If you need a CFO for your company, do not ask me to do it. Okay? I'm not a bad guy. I'm a good guy. I'm smart. I can read financial reports. I can act upon the things I read on financial reports. But I cannot sit in a room all day and figure out and work with the auditors and work with the bank auditors and work with these. It's not my gift. That's why I have John Barber on our team. That is his gift. He's a CFO. I have him on our... We have different people on my team. Pretty much everybody on my team has a different skill set. But we have to bring them together. That's what a leader does, is bring them together in alignment, clarity, and focus. Now, you may have a couple people that are the same because that's your business. You know, you may all be lawyers, but there are different skills that you bring to the table. You know, lawyers talk about finders, grinders, and minders. You know, a finder is the rainmaker that brings the business in. The grinder is the one who does all the work to make it happen. And then the minder is the one who minds the business. You got to have somebody to run the business. Lawyers talk about finders, grinders, and minders. Different skill sets, but it brings focus. Number four, a strong commitment to how the work gets done. There needs to be a strong work ethic in your team. And everybody's work ethic has to be similar, or it's like tug of war when you have three people tugging and two not, remember as children. And this creates movement. When you have people moving at different speeds on your team, it gets a little dissident. It's difficult, I have to tell you. And I will say, this has been a struggle for me because I am an early adopter. I'm a let's run with it, let's go with it. Other people are late adopters, need some extra work. And so I'm the kind to say, let's go take the hill. And my team is waiting in the back somewhere. And so, I mean, I've done it. I mean, I admit it. I have. We have a board of directors in churches, you call them elders. I've left elders hanging behind me, my board behind me. I've left employees behind me because I'm running ahead. Well, you have to have a movement that works together. And you've got to figure out what that is to allow that. And if you do all this, the fifth one is really a cool one here. There's mutual accountability or trust. Trust is huge in a company because the lack of trust in a company can destroy the productivity inside the company. I don't trust you. I don't trust them. I don't trust that department. I don't trust that guy down the hall or that lady over there. They have an agenda that's against it. But the team comes together and builds trust. I did a whole session on trust building. If you want to see it, just go to it and you'll see it. It was a couple of months ago. But without trust, mistrust, or distrust, you have lost your momentum as a company, your momentum as a team. Now, what are some best practices? Let me give you five best practices quickly on coming together. The first one is this, and number one and number two are very similar, so I'm going to say them together. Collaborative behavior. That is called working together for the betterment of your team. The betterment of your team. Collaborative is working together. Behavior, the behavior of the team is that you work together. The second one, I'm going to put them together. Put up the second one here. Creating a giving culture. This is huge. And I'm not talking about giving money to United Way, giving money to your charities. That's all good and important. I'm talking about giving inside of the group. Let me give you an example. A few years ago, I worked with an organization part-time, and I was doing speaking for them, and there was another guy on the team that was doing some speaking, and he did a great thing on a subject that I was about to do next month in another whole location, another part of the world, actually. And I went to him, I said, can I use one or two of those points that you created? He looked at me and said, no. No. I said, why not? He said, because I created it. It's mine. I go, wow. Okay, so I go to the boss, the head of the company that we were doing, it was a man. I go, this guy won't let me, he's not working together with me on this one. He goes, well, he created it, it's his. I mean, it was so dysfunctional, it was unbelievable. The boss said, he did it, you go create your own stuff. I said, this isn't, you know, patent work here we're doing. I'm just giving a speech and I want to use one of his points. And yet they wouldn't do it. No giving culture. It wasn't here. It was somewhere. It was no giving culture. There is a sense in a team that if you have a good team, that if you succeed, I succeed. If you succeed, I succeed. If you succeed, I succeed. And not the competition. The competition is out there. We got enough to worry about the competition. We each succeed when the other succeeds. And so it's so important that you develop an atmosphere that is collaborative, but also giving. It is incredible when someone comes up to me and goes, hey, I got a great idea. The thing you said yesterday, what if we did this and this? I'll help you with that. I go, wow, this is cool. It's not even their job. They're helping me with my part of my job because they have a giving spirit. Giving is not just giving money to nonprofits or helping kids get to college or helping. That's all good and we all need to do it. But giving is also inside your company. You need to give some of the things that you are skilled at to other people. And number three, this is key and should probably be first, but picking the right team members. Picking the right team members. There is nothing worse than having a wrong team member on a team. I mean, it is the worst. It's not that they're necessarily bad. They could be, well, there's two kinds. One's just the wrong person. The other, they could be toxic and destroy the team. So either they're destroying the team just because they're the wrong person on the team and they're not pulling their own weight, or they're bad and they're toxic. There's a lot of writing on this. Jim Collins, Good to Great, talks about getting the right people on the right bus and then getting them in the right seat. Take that to heart because that is a very difficult thing. If you are the team leader, you got to make sure you have the right people on your team and there's the right mix of skills, which I talked about a few moments ago. Number four, and this is important. Supporting a strong sense of community and relationship. Community and relationship. Now, your business is not a family. People say, oh, I want my business to be like a family. Well, unless you have a family business, that's different. But most of us don't. It's not a family. Families last forever. Business relationships don't last forever. Big difference. But you need to foster relationships inside the business. I have a friend who's here today and is a part of Boca Lead, and he had his wife was ill for a while, for a period of time last year, and she's just recovering and long-term issues just in her health. And you know what? His boss never once acknowledged that illness. Never once acknowledged the illness. The other peers, now his team did, but his peer team never acknowledged the issue of the health of a dying spouse. Now, she didn't die, she lived, but it was risky. And I remember he was here and he had a bunch of us participate in helping him and we developed some prayer things and all. We're just friends. But his own work environment didn't even at a crisis point in his life do anything in that. Now, we're not people's mothers and fathers. I totally get that. But there is a sense of camaraderie and relationship that you have to have, I think, in business. And you do it with your clients sometimes. You do it with even your competitors. I remember when I had an issue with a family member who was dying, I had competitors writing me and offering me solace. I thought if a competitor would do it, why aren't the teams doing it? You know, just show some humanness in your business. There is a human side to our business. And if you want to develop a good team relationship. And then the final one, fifth, and this is important. The team has to have the ability to do the work of your business. We don't build teams just to have teams. And we don't build them just to have relationships. We don't build them just to have collaborative behavior. We build teams so that we can make our business do more than without the team. We put it together, and I believe it can. And we've seen so many examples of this in life, in family, in business. You can mention it. I'm just going to mention one as we are about to close. I'm not a big fan of Disney World, okay? I go once in a while. I mean, I'm a fan of it. I love it, but I just, the crowds get to me, you know, just like way too hot and all the rest. I picked the wrong time. It's a time when all the North has come down to be in Florida. Somehow we just miss it. Well, Epcot, so we go to Epcot sometimes. A few years ago, we had the president of Epcot speak at a group I was involved in, and he was sitting with me. It was Brad Rex. He's no longer the president. A fine man. He's just, and he writes books on integrity. If you ever read a book by Brad Rex, just R-E-X, fantastic guy. So Brad was talking, and we were talking, and he said he started working at Epcot on 9/11 that month. So it was a very difficult time to, I mean, he didn't start working there. He became the president of Epcot that month. So what he did was he decided for 30 days, because he had been in the back office of Disney, he had never interacted with the people. He'd always been on the CFO side of Disney. Now he's going to be in the front. He decided to do a different job every morning for 30 days in Epcot. So he was working this thing and working there and working there and working all the different things, get in the uniform, they call them cast members. And so he told me, he said, one day he was working the street sweeper staff. You know, the guys in the white shorts and the little jumpers and the little pink and blue shirts and the hat? He was in one. Now, Brad Rex is my height, but very skinny, so he's very noticeable. Had a big thing that says Brad Orlando, you know how they always do that. So he's sweeping, and they're taught, the street sweepers, they call them environmentals, whatever, they that when someone comes to the trash can, you stand at attention and stop. It's part of what you do. So if you're at the trash can and doing your little thing, and someone comes, you just stop, show respect to the patron, and let them throw their trash away, and then you keep going. So he's doing this. His team is walking across in front of him, his real team. The guys that, and ladies that work for him, they were going to look at a project across Epcot, and they decided to go through the park. So there he is, and one of them had to throw a candy wrapper or a gum wrapper away. So he stops at attention, which you're supposed to do, and here's the team. His team, the people that work for him, the executive vice presidents of Epcot, are standing within 5 feet of him. And the lady walks by him, throws her wrapper away, and then they stop and talk about the project. He's standing there listening about his project, and they didn't recognize him. No makeup on, no hat on. He was there, as I am standing here, except in white shorts and the blue and pink shirt striped, with his big name right here. And they talk, and he just stood at attention, and no one ever noticed him. And off they walked to their project. Later that day, when he was back in his suit, he went to that project, and he walked across Epcot, and every single person who worked there recognized him. Why? Because he's the president, and presidents at Disney wear suits. And they knew that guy walking across, tall, in a suit, was the president. And he said these words to me and a couple others that were at the table. He said, "We forget all the people that help us do what we do. We forget it. We cannot do it alone. Disney could not exist if there weren't a bunch of men and women changing the trash 3, 4, 5 times a day, sweeping our messes up all day long. It couldn't be done. Who are the people in your life that you need to recognize that may not be a part of your executive team, but are part of the people that help make you do what you do successful? And I would say at the beginning of this new year, go to them and thank them." Brad Rex said every single time he walked across that park after that day, he stopped and thanked several members of his larger team, the team of Epcot, the 19,000 workers or whatever, he would stop and thank them for the job they did. You and I live above a lot of problems in this world, but there are a lot of people underneath us that support us. And every once in a while, stop and thank them. And I think this would be a better place, Boca Raton, if we began to do that and others did it as well. You cannot do it alone. And the sooner we recognize it, the better this place will be to live, to work, to play, and to rear our children. Thank you.